It's close to the bottom of the hour here on Roadkill Radio. And like Jane, if you'd like to send us an email, please do so at roadkillradio@live.ca. We'll be talking to lawyer Doug Christie about the polygamy case here unfolding in Vancouver in just a few minutes. But before then, Carrie and I both had something that we wanted to talk to you about. Carrie, we both touched on the introduction of the show. And Carrie, you were born and raised in the United States, traveled down there quite a bit. So all of this pat-down or nude photography to get onto an airplane is affecting you. I just say getting under your skin. That's getting onto your skin.
Well, better you than them.
Okay. Thank you very much. I'll take that as a compliment. Should I, Ron?
At least I know
okay.
you.
Okay. So what's the solution? I mean, you got Ron said that, you know, is there any proof that any one terrorist has been stopped by this? Well, there probably isn't, because it's hard to prove a negative. There could be thousands or hundreds or dozens of terrorists who said, I'm not going to be able to get through with my plan to bring a AK-47 on the plane because of this stuff. I better think of something else.
You'd have to have some pretty interesting body rolls to hide that.
Sure. So did they
catch any and put them
on the
court?
Spot? I don't know. So what do you think that the U.S. should be doing here now?
Well, you know what, Terry? I think this goes in, and you can use the same thing with cameras on our streets. You know, this when a society just starts embracing state involvement or intrusion in ways that. Steps over the boundaries, and I think that's what you're seeing in the United States. And I have to say, it does get my American blood boiling, because we were raised down there. I was very thankful, but the schools are no longer the same. But if you believed in something, you stood up and fought for it. That was something that was ingrained into our education early on. You know, and this is what people are doing down there. They're saying enough is enough. With technology nowadays, whether it's testing for explosives, all kinds of things. There are a number of options that are available to this. But what my greatest concern is people saying, well, I'm going to sacrifice my personal liberty. You can invade my privacy. You can grope my body, all in the name of security. You know, at some point we start losing an identity. We start giving over things that is not probably healthy for a nation as far as being able to keep the separation of state and citizen, defined.
Well, perhaps there should be a more positive discrimination that takes place in the airports. Some people call it profiling. But just as we were talking with our last guest, Bill Gardner, about he was talking about discrimination, some positive discriminations. Maybe like Israel is a very tight security, and they constantly are discriminating based on people's actions, travel documents, where they are going, where they are coming from, ethnicity, national identity, this sort of stuff.
And they
weed the people out without the need for this sort of disruptive action.
I have to tell you a funny story. Just after 9/11, I happened to be traveling down to Mexico with my four children. So mom with her four young children. And there were two people hauled off on, you know, before you got to the plane to check your shoes, and I was one of them. I assure you, you know, I probably would be the last person profiled on this trip. But there I was, you know, take your shoes off and all the rest of it. You know, I agree with you, and I think we have to get by this. There has to be a practical application to the information and intelligence that we have available to us. Yes, there are certain circumstances where people need to be searched and all the rest of it. But to have everybody like a herd of cattle, groped or pictured, you know, and I just applaud the movement down south that's standing up, and they're going to create so much havoc and so much problem that, you know, things are going to have to change.
Have either of you been to Israel?
No.
No.
Okay, I have, and I've been through LL's security. There's no full body scan. There is no groping. But what they do is there's about three stages of interview that you go through. And some of it is psychological. There comes a time when you begin to say, my goodness, is this ever going to stop? Are they going to stop? And I'm convinced that what they are doing is creating a climate in which if you are uncertain, if you're on edge, if you're hiding something, you'll begin to manifest some attitudes that they can spot. They look you in the eye when they're interviewing you. Yes, they do profile people. If you fit certain profiles that are, that have, you know, if you are a Middle Eastern Muslim man between the ages of 18 and 40, you may get some extra security. Similarly, if you're traveling and you have no family with you, you may also get some extra security checks. They're not invasive, but they are careful. And they do not have the kinds of problems that we have been encountering.
Well, Len, our producer, actually gave me an idea on what was really behind this. And down in the States, of course, financially, they're having so much problem. And when I sent out my little blurb about wanting to do my rant tonight, you know, I put in some facetious comments about, you know, giving some low-income paid security guard a private lap dance that couldn't otherwise be afforded. And of course, Len, our technician, called back and emailed back and said, "Hey, wait a minute, I'm going to volunteer." And I thought, that's what's really going on here. You know, they can't afford to pay the security guard, so they've got to give them some perks.
They've added a benefit. Did you know that in the TSA in the United States, you can apply for a job as a screener if you have not had a rape conviction in the last 10 years.
Oh, well,
so if you had a rape conviction 11 years ago, you can apply for a job as a TSA screener. Now, I had someone send me an email about the ultimate solution to this idea, and that is that at the airport there should be this little cinder block booth with mechanism for detecting the fumes of explosive materials and that. And if it detects those, it ignites them. And then an automatic voice signal comes off saying, "We now have another vacancy for standbys on United flight da 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 da."
Well, I heard somebody's already marketing special underwear that will block the image.
All right. Before we get into my subject that I want to talk about, and then that of course precedes the our final guest of the evening, we got another email from Jane again, saying Bill Gardner made great points. I think there is one overarching problem, though. For decades, we have been told that people are basically good. I disagree. Just as Terry is saying at the moment, infantilism. People need to grow up. Stop being babies who think only of themselves. Immature people think only of themselves. I'll take it one step further. People, all people, are not good. We have this selfishness. In Christianity, it's called sin. Sin is not good. And if people are sinners, then they are not good. So, the trouble with Canada is that people are sinners. They're basically bad. Sorry, that's the truth. Jane, thank you very much.
Well said.
Well, sin, there can be salvation. Anyway, good point. And yeah, the infantilism, I thought the...
You know what, Terry, that you're so brilliant.
Oh.
You have these moments where
I like to summarize things. I think
But you know what? It is. And if we could put an adverb or a pronoun then next to our, you know, what equality is, you know, that's what infantile. That is what it's being defined as, right?
Well, we discussed last week with Kelvin Helene the fact that the Indian Act in Canada defines all Aboriginal people as legal children.
Yeah.
What is going on now is that the equality drive is making all Canadians legal children.
Exactly.
Good point.
We've taken the Indian Act one step further.
Good. Jane has just sent another email, but we have to move along here. We told our in the email you sent out earlier today, telling people what's on the show tonight. You mentioned that I'll be discussing the case of Elaine Campione, who was found guilty.
Tragic case.
Who was found guilty of two counts of first-degree murder in the drowning of her infant children. And really the big, most, the one of the disturbing aspects of the case is that shortly after she did that, she turned a video camera on herself and basically said, "See, I've done it. Now my horrible husband will never be able to get those children away from me." She and her strange husband were in the middle of a marital breakdown and had lots of problems. So this was all a very disturbing case. And she was obviously a disturbed woman, but, you know, planned and carried out these murders and was convicted of first-degree murder. But following the jury verdict, declaring her guilty of two counts of first-degree murder. The judge in the case, Judge Alfred Stong, turned the tables and pointed to Campione's husband to shoulder some of the blame, or maybe all of it. He said, if Campione had not been so abused and so used and discarded as a person, her two daughters could still be alive. Now, a lot of what we do on the show, a lot of what motivates me is to root out hypocrisy and double standards. Mm. A lot of sort of my passion about free speech is because I see out there that some sorts of speech don't get hassled at all, but speech, other speech, people saying in the same mode, talking about ideas, they get hassled. They get discriminated against. I'm talking about pro-life protesters here who constantly are being hassled. But if you're protesting in favor of some politically correct thing, you're not going to get hassled. And there's so many other aspects to, in an egalitarian society, we'll continue the theme that we have here. It's actually, it's not truly egalitarian, of course, at all. It's only the favored things. It's only the favored selected groups who get protection of the Human Rights Commissions. It's the double standards here. And so often we've had guests on our show here, Carrie, who have talked about the double standards in the courts when it comes to family disputes, mm-hmm. about how men are discriminated mm-hmm. against, how the default is to the woman.
Yep.
You know, these terrible tensions in our society right now between, and we did not, and Bill Gairdner did in his book talk about this, about the trouble of feminism and its toxic effects on civil society. And so much of toxic radical feminism has infected our court system.
Well, and you know what, Terry, this case, because, you know, when you hear these strong words from this judge, we assume that there was some evidence to support it.
Most of what I read said there was no evidence at all to support this. It was asserted with no evidence behind it. And I read something like this, and the great Winnipeg broadcaster Charles Adler wrote a column for the Sun newspaper chain after this, where he made the very salient point of saying, would we ever, ever see anything remotely close to this asserted by a judge if the person just found guilty of first-degree murder, mind you, not manslaughter, not second, but first-degree murder, planned and premeditated, had been a man? Hmm. Can you imagine the uproar from coast to coast if
a woman got blamed?
If a woman got blamed for Colonel Russell Williams' murders, break-ins. If he had only received more loving at his home, maybe he wouldn't have had to turn. You know, can you imagine? Can you imagine? Then why is it acceptable to blame a husband here? This is an absolute nth degree manifestation of the toxic effects of radical feminism on our courts, where a judge can think that it's perfectly okay for him to say, you know, really the woman wasn't to blame here. Really, the woman, it's the man's fault because the man was mean to her. Folks, if you're out there listening to this and trying to make sense of this in our modern world today, you're going to go crazy because you can't really. Because you've got radical feminism and actually regular feminism asserting two different things at the same time. One is that women are masters of their own domain, can do anything they want to do, can be in charge, and you dare not put us down. We are not, our characteristics are not so different than that we can't do anything we want to do. And at the other hand, you also hear that any time a woman gets into trouble like this, it's the man's fault.
She's a victim.
She's a victim. How can you have it both ways? How can prostitutes, on one hand, be professionals out there earning an honest living, on the other hand, be the victims of pimps and their johns. How can that work at the same time? How can a woman, planned and premeditated, murder her two helpless children, be convicted of first-degree murder, and at the same time be totally not responsible for this because her husband is responsible for abusing, using, and discarding her? I'm not saying that the husband might not have been a bad person, might have been a bad person. I don't know, but he was not on trial for murder here. There was no evidence backed up that said that he was abusive. Even if he was, that does not change the fact that this woman was found sane, was found capable of standing trial.
Completely competent.
Was found competent.
Responsible.
And was responsible for her actions and was convicted. And you have a judge, Judge Alfred Stong of the Ontario Superior Court, the well-trained Ontario Superior Court of Justice, saying that if Campione had not been so abused, so used and discarded as a person, her two daughters could still be alive today.
Terry, you will remember that there was a time when there was a standard within journalism that said judges should not be criticized. That was a time when judges did not express their own opinions, their personal opinions. They only ruled according to the law as they found it.
There was a time when judges weren't activists, when judges didn't give political speeches, when judges didn't go down to New Zealand and say that we have to make up new law. There was a time.
It gets worse because I understand that within the evidence before the court was a lot of evidence from supervisors who were there when the children were exchanged between this man and this woman. And without exception, all of them talked about what a devoted, appropriately caring individual he was to his kids.
Judges have opened themselves to this kind of criticism by trying to move into the position that Pierre Trudeau described as philosopher kings, to rule over us all.
Well, and there's no accountability to them.
We need to be adults here. I mean, part of this, and you know what, we glommed onto this 45 minutes ago about infantilism and how the state wants to make us infants. This judge wants to make a first-degree murderer an infant, responsible.
And you're picking right up on what I was going to say. You know, have we taken the victim syndrome too seriously?
Well, sure. Everybody's a victim. Certain particular groups, in the name of egalitarianism, are victims. And once a victim, you're always a victim. And victimhood is an infantile kind of state, right?
And you know what? He rubber stamped.
Because you don't take responsibility for your own actions, your own well-being. You are a perpetual victim. Has radical feminism so infected our ability to think clearly, to use our minds, to have a moral and intellectual backbone that we are now at the point of a judge of an Ontario Superior Court saying that a first-degree murderer is a victim herself, and she's not really to blame for this? That's where we are, folks.
Perfect,
this is outrageous.
Perfect appeal point, if you ask me.
Outrageous. Outrageous.
All Canadians are equal, but the victims are more equal than others.
Yeah, we all need to be victims.
It's
part of this two categories that Bill Gardner was talking about, the state and all these disenfranchised children that the state looks after. They're all victims, children, they're child victims in a way, you know, and they're all going to need special help and special caring, and you're never going to grow up. You're going to be in this victim state. This is a mature woman who the judge is essentially saying she's really just a child. She needs our protection.
Well, more than that, Terry, she goes to jail now, you know, just happy and just sitting there with the big smile on her face because she got him, you know? She not only killed the children, but she got him.
I mean, we've seen a lot of cases like this where parents do this in horrible situations. Men have killed children. Women have killed children. And there's a lot of cases of women killing children. It's more likely that a woman will kill her children to get in circumstances like this than a man. And these are all sad and horrible cases. And, you know, a part of it is that people are not taking responsibility for their own actions, that they that they are feeling sorry for themselves, and they aren't growing up. And
well,
boy,
and the judges are cradling them in their arms, the judicial arms.
That's right.
Yep.
So we that's my therapy moment.
Well, no, and well, you know, that people should write letters to this judge, and you know, that this guy should be hauled up before the Canadian Judicial Council. You know, this is probably one more case. There's getting to be too many now of why we need some way to get rid of judges and not rely on other judges to do it.
Not get rid of all judges, just judges.
Just impeach our philosopher kings when they err.
Yeah. You are listening to Roadkill Radio. If you want to join Jane in sending us emails, please do so at roadkillradio@live.ca or try to phone us at 604-525-4167. Best bet is an email, though, because we're going to be on the phone in a few minutes with our friend Doug Christie, lawyer, great defender of free speech and individual liberty. He was here to talk to us today about the important polygamy case that is taking place right now, well, not this moment, but this week here in Vancouver. Hi, Doug, are you with us? Doug Christie, are you there?
Yeah.
Oh, hi. Thanks for joining us. You're coming in loud and clear. It's Terry O'Neill here. I'm joined by Ron Gray.
Hello,
and,
Doug.
Hello.
And Carrie Simpson as well is here, too.
Hello, Doug.
Hi there.
So how was your day in court today? Now, we should say that this isn't just going to be a short adventure for you lawyers and, 50 of your nearest and dearest friends that are sitting there taking up row upon row of the gallery seats. But this court proceeding involving polygamy is scheduled to go right through till January, is it not?
Yeah, it's going to be a long haul, and there's going to be a lot of witnesses, experts, I suppose, people claiming to know what's best for society and how polygamy is allegedly destructive and harmful.
So now this isn't a trial involving any one particular person. This is a hearing that was arose out of a Constitutional Question Act. The Attorney General for British Columbia and the Lieutenant Governor and Council put a reference question to the court asking about the constitutionality of a certain section within our criminal code. Is that how it, am I understanding it?
Yeah, that's right. The section that prohibited polygamy.
All right, and so they want there's a challenge to see whether or not it's going to stand up to our to a constitutional right that individuals cannot participate in this kind of relationship.
That's about right. Yeah.
So the Canadian Association of Free Expression is one. You're representing that group, one of many different groups that want to get a finger into this polygamy pie, as it were. Have their
now that's dangerous, Terry.
have their say, and the cafe's, as I might say, position is in favor of striking down the criminal code section involving polygamy. You is it cafe's position that there should be no law whatsoever involving marriage or marital unions or anything like that?
Well, no criminal law. I mean, since we legalized same-sex marriage and extended the provisions of the charter to that phenomenon, then it seems a little hypocritical to suddenly decide that polygamy should be criminal, which has a much longer religious history than same-sex marriage, which I guess is probably not a long-standing historical phenomenon.
You're not suggesting, Doug Christie, that all those people that said, hey, wait a minute, we've got to really discuss and debate the issue before we go granting status rights to same-sex marriages, all those people that said the implications and this could lead us down the slippery slope, you're not suggesting that they may have been right?
Well, yeah, obviously I am. I'm saying that once you've abandoned the traditional moral criterion for marriage, then there's really no reason other than sociological speculation about potential harm to prohibit any other form of conjugal union. And I mean, what's the difference between conjugal union and conjugal relations? I guess it depends on whether there's a commitment or not.
And, well, yeah, that's something that I saw that was kind of confusing about the law, because technically if one is separated from one's wife but then has an affair with someone else, that's almost, under the way the law reads now, you can almost say, well, that's polygamy, or it's sort of a backhanded adultery or something like that. I don't know.
The law is very vague in terms of what a conjugal union is, because at one point, I gather, the Attorney General of Canada was saying that conjugal relations are okay, but a conjugal union could offend the law, and therefore conjugal unions where a commitment is made, a long-term commitment, say to look after children, is a criminal act, whereas conjugal relations, which is sort of temporary, temporary cohabitation, suddenly becomes safer than the act of making a commitment to long-term maintenance for children.
Okay, there was another aspect that sort of confounds me, Doug Christie, and that, because I sat in the gallery, as you know, on Monday for the opening statements of the Attorney General for British Columbia, and what confounded me was that if I'm, as a woman, involved in a polyandry type relationship, right? You know, me and five of my nearest and dearest favorite guys.
Yeah.
That's okay. They're not offended by that, and that's not harmful to me as a woman, and the state doesn't need to be involved to take care of me. But if I decide to enter into a polygamist relationship and be one of five wives, suddenly my brains have taken a vacation, and requires the state to come in and take care of me.
Yeah, I don't know whether I was right, but I perceived as well that multiple same-sex partners was not considered harmful, but polygamous relations with members of the opposite sex was somehow more dangerous.
So I want to just clarify something here. Is the government actually arguing that it's only their only target is a polygamous relationship in which there are multiple wives and a single male? Is that their...
Yeah, the polygyny, which is, as you defined it, is the area of polygamy that they consider to be contrary to the law, I guess.
Well, Doug, I understand there's a difference here between the Attorney General of British Columbia and the Attorney General of Canada.
Yeah, there is to some extent, and I'm not sure just what it is, but...
Okay, because it's the Attorney General of BC who is limiting his concerns to polygyny. I find myself wondering if we aren't kind of sliding toward Sharia law. You know, in Iran, the government maintains a number of establishments which they call chastity houses, where because they don't want prostitution, so a man can go into one of these houses, and under Sharia law, it's permitted to hire a wife for any period between an hour and 99 years. So you can hire a wife for an hour and
it's true, Carrie.
But that's so they don't have prostitution there, you see.
I got it now.
Got it? Okay.
Well, I'm still trying to wrap around how my brain can go from being really smart and taking care of myself with my five guys, but if I don't want to do the dishes every night and think, hey, there might be some benefits to this, gosh, I guess it's in the dishes, is it?
Well, it's a
I should want to do the dishes every night for everybody.
Carrie, it's obviously another manifestation of radical feminism, where if the women have the upper hand or other body part, it's fine.
There wouldn't be enough hands, Terry.
But the men do, that's not fine.
I have been reading...
An important question for Doug Christie here, though. Yeah. Doug, I understand that once we've devalued the whole concept of marriage recognizing a common law marriage as marriage, recognizing same-sex marriage as a true marriage, then what's the difference now? Why shouldn't we recognize polygamy as marriage as well and decriminalize it? But at the core of your beliefs, though, and of this Canadian Association of Free Expression, is there no sort of ideal of, well, actually we really believe that the marriage should be this, that marriage is an important concept, an important part of our civilization, an important part of our society, that we should, that we need a stable family, that we need this. Is there any sort of belief system there with your group that is behind this, or should be expressed?
Well, I don't know that the discussion is so much about the long-term effects on society. It would seem that by virtue of the existing changes in mores and folkways and marriage customs, that there's not much left of the traditional definition of marriage. But it would seem that you could strongly argue that polygamous marriage, where there is a voluntary association between a man and several women, where there's stability for children and the continuation of a responsibility ratified by law, would be better in some cases than certainly than serial monogamy, where various divorce courts take various parts of a man's, in some cases a woman's, property, or in than single parent families, where, you know, how difficult it is to raise children. One person has to do that alone. You know, if you were thinking of the social benefits, I would say there's arguments to be made for the alternative of more mothers in a relationship capable of looking after children and looking after each other's children and each other than this current situation with some what you could call conjugal arrangements, or perhaps even just family arrangements with single parents.
But Doug, we were earlier this evening, we were talking with Bill Gairdner, and one of the things that he has said for years is that we have removed the contractual basis for marital union. Wouldn't it be better for us to be reestablishing that contractual basis to defend what marriage originally was and is, which is about children. It's not about adults and satisfying their needs. It's about providing a safe place for women and children. Wouldn't we be better off to be moving back toward that than to say, well, we've given this away and we've given that away, and now the whole game is up?
Well, there's nothing to prevent people from teaching religious concepts of what marriage should be and practicing it. Society, the secular society and the secular marriage is now so far removed from anything that is, I would say, consistent with traditional Christian morality, that there's no connection. The state has been completely preempted by secular ideas. There's no scope or room for any religious idea or Christian idea particularly.
But we give, in society gives privileges and protections to marriage precisely because it is the cradle out of which the next generation of citizens comes. It is the perpetuation of civilization. It's the place where the principles and values of the culture are transmitted from generation to generation. When we let this erosion continue, then everybody and anybody gets all of those protections and privileges, which is a real cost to you and to me, but it's also a real cost to the culture and to civilization. It endangers civilization to do that.
I'm not denying that. I don't disagree.
You know,
but we don't have a country that recognizes those ideas at all.
Well, and you know what was interesting? When we were at the opening statements again, I sat there and kind of my mouth dropped open, and I had to bite my tongue because I wanted to giggle. The Craig Jones.
How could you bite your tongue with your mouth being open at the same time?
Okay, so. I am talented, Terry. Okay. You know that by now.
All right.
But you know, I listened to there, and again, going back to the same-sex debate, as Craig Jones, the lawyer for the Attorney General, with his four other assisting lawyers, stood up and said, you know, that the reason why we want the law to stand where it is I should also tell our listeners that the amicus that was assigned to this case believes that the section should be struck, that he believes it's unconstitutional, that it's rooted in puritanical Christian notions that are outdated and discriminatory. But the Attorney General for BC stood up, Craig Jones, and made this argument that no, that may be true that it was rooted in Christian puritanical notions, but in fact, maybe it was right because, you know, there is harm to children, there is harm to family. And he stood up there and he listed that children are harmed by this relationship, that it creates destabilization within society. There was a number of other harmful to women, all these other notions.
It's anti-democratic.
Right, because of the power structures. But, you know,
it's patriarchal.
Well, and you know what the irony to that, or the hypocrisy, is all those same factors are very much involved in the same-sex debate. You know, we know it's harmful to children. We know that it destabilizes society. Mm-hmm. Why isn't the Attorney General of British Columbia taking the feds to task and saying, look, you know, we're going to go all out here. Not only are we saying, you know, keep polygamy within the criminal court or criminal code, but, you know, we got to go back and revisit the whole marriage issue, because all of these things are probably more real factors than the issues as they relate to polygamy.
Well, if you expect consistency from any government official today, you'd have to be kind of oblivious to what's happened in the recent past. This country has no consistency in its principles, as far as I can see.
Well, speaking of on the issue of consistency, the Canadian Association for Free Expression has long been a consistent supporter of free speech. Seems to me more than other related issues regarding freedom. What exactly is the interest of a free speech type organization in the polygamy? Why has CAFE decided to get involved in this case? It's not necessarily a free speech case. Are they coming at it from the point of view of freedom of religion, freedom of assembly?
Yeah, well,
give me some background.
I've asked
there.
That question, and I believe the answer from my client is that they believe that it's a wedge issue. The real objective here has nothing to do with polygamy or marriage, but to actually break apart a religious community using the welfare of the children as a pretext, and that this wedge, once driven into the, shall we say, rather fringe group, will move further in other directions, in other religious communities. And if you want to talk about the dangers of a patriarchal society, I would suppose that even the Catholic Church could be accused of being patriarchal. And those people who hold the view that patriarchy being inconsistent with democracy is the enemy of, I don't know, the modern progressive society. Well,
egalitarianism.
Pardon?
Egalitarianism.
Yeah, and they'll be moving on to other targets. So although no one else seems to realize, as I probably did and as others may have, that the same-sex debate was just a step along the road to another debate which will attack anything that is authoritarian, anything that is religious, mm-hmm. particularly mm-hmm. Christian,
yeah.
and anything that is patriarchal.
You know, Doug, it is my firm opinion that if you have a fence that keeps out wild animals and protects your family, you really ought not to tear down that fence until you are prepared to put up a bigger and stronger one. But what we're doing is just tearing down every last shred of that fence. That fence is the family.
Once there's a hole in the fence, it's not much good to anything.
Doug, I'm just a little thick on this one here. Sounds like you're in favor of something, but you're arguing something else here, or CAFE is. Walk me through this again, CAFE's reasoning here, why it wants to support the striking down of the criminal code section involving polygamy.
Because I believe the position of CAFE to be that this is a wedge issue.
That CAFE wants it to be a wedge issue?
No, it is the effort to maintain the ban on polygamy is a pretext for an attack upon a religious community.
Mm-hmm. Well,
essentially,
in this province.
So essentially, CAFE is defending religious freedom here. Is that what it's?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, I didn't realize.
Pick up on that, Terry? Because I actually was this show when Doris was here. See what we learn on Roadkill? Doris Darvishay from Real Women of British Columbia, and I learned that the BC Teachers Federation was involved in this case. And wanting to maintain the criminality of polygamy. Wait a minute here. They were all out, full board, supporting the same-sex marriage issue. So what is their rationale for wanting to keep the criminal code? And it's because of the defense of religious belief in this. At least that's the best I can come up with. Because the two positions just don't mix.
Yeah, but there's another thing floating around here now when we talk about religious freedom. And we can defend religious liberty, but there can only be one religion at the core of a culture, and you cannot defend religious liberty on the premise that all religions are equal and equally irrelevant. That's simply the destruction of everything. That's the destruction of civilization.
Yeah, but isn't that the conundrum or dilemma that the Constitution of Canada created mm-hmm. when it said you can't discriminate between religions?
Yeah.
Well, it does not actually say that.
It does actually say that in 15.1.
No, it says you cannot discriminate against a person on the basis of their religion.
Well, what's the difference?
Well, that because it does not say that you can't discriminate between religions.
Well,
everyone who chooses to go into this church instead of that mosque is discriminating on between religions. But they're not discriminating against a person on the basis of their religion.
Well, I would find that a difficult distinction to make, but maybe there's something there. I don't see it.
Well, I find it very easy to see. If we choose to go to this temple and not to that synagogue, we are making a distinction between religions. But we are not discriminating against any person on the basis of their religion.
Yeah, but both of those facilities have the right to exist
in Canada. They have the right to exist.
Okay.
But
what would they use to defend their right to exist?
Section 15 of the Charter says you may not discriminate against any person on the basis of their religion.
But isn't what this case is about, though?
Yeah, isn't that what the sect or group of Mormons in Bountiful really want, is to practice their religion, and the government is saying you can't do it that way because we don't agree with your religion.
So. There are religions that espouse cannibalism, genital mutilation of women, amputation of hands for theft, and those things are not consistent with the criminal law established according to the culture of Canada. Well, the same thing is true in this case. The culture of Canada establishes certain norms for the institution of marriage because...
But we change that with the same-sex marriage,
Ron. But we should roll that back.
Well, that's not happening.
Yeah, that's a good point. So... one of the sort of the downstream effects of your position, or maybe what CAFE is saying and what Doug Christie is saying, is that...
Well, you got to be careful there.
Okay.
I'm saying what my clients
CAFE would say, then, that those social conservative religious people who are appalled that there's an effort to decriminalize polygamy should really shake their heads and say... they should say instead that they support the effort to decriminalize polygamy, because the counter effort to maintain the ban on polygamy is a de facto attack on religious liberty. Is that what CAFE is saying?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Okay.
And the other side of that coin is, how do you decide that Winston Blackmore isn't practicing a legitimate religion and not decide that the Catholic Church that doesn't allow women in the priesthood is practicing or isn't practicing a legitimate religion, or they insist on male celibacy or any of the positions taken by various churches.
Yeah, one goes to the institution of marriage, which is described and protected and supported
and altered
by our culture.
That was yesterday. Today the reality is different.
Listen, Satanism advocates child sacrifice in order to gain power. Are we going to say that all religions are equal and anyone can do whatever they want to do? No, there are norms in
Canada. Yeah, but we're defining this within the context of human relationships, marriage,
this is a good argument, because also regarding religious freedoms, you've got the a-religious person or the atheistic person who's out there saying, why is it that my heartfelt, deeply held, essential beliefs about the state of the universe, about the way life, the meaning of life, where we came from, where we're going, the universe, why are they second-class beliefs? Why is it that somebody who maybe has spent a tenth of the time thinking about religion, about these issues, but wraps himself in a cloak of religion, why are his beliefs suddenly more sacred, or more protected, rather, than my beliefs? Why are his beliefs special? In a society that defends certain actions that will allow certain things on the basis of religion, they are, you know, like the Catholic Church is allowed to discriminate against divorced people and the hiring of teachers for their schools because of their religious beliefs.
So far.
Now, why? Now, my atheist libertarian friend would say, you know, like, I have heartfelt, deeply held beliefs too, and they don't get the time of the day when in the public forum compared to somebody who just says, "Ah, it's sacred, it's religious." I understand these, and I don't have any easy answers to this. And
there is an answer for that. Doug Wilson, when he was debating with Dawkins, Dawkins kept telling him, you know, the title of his book was "God Is Not Great: How Religion Poisons Everything." And he said,
"Religion is Christopher Hitchens."
God is
not great. God is not great. It's Christopher Hitchens.
Oh, it's Hitchens. That's Hitchens. Okay. He said, in his debate with Doug Wilson, he said, religion is bad for society. And Wilson said, on what basis do you call anything good or bad if you believe that everything is just the accidental product of time and chance? Therefore, nothing has any meaning or any value. Hitler is exactly equal to Mother Teresa. Cruelty is exactly equal to kindness. That's the answer to your atheist friend.
Okay. Doug Christie, any response to that?
Well, what's really happened, it appears to me, is this, that Canada, as a result of its constitution, has created for itself a complete moral and insoluble moral dilemma. The conflict between religious freedom, for one thing, and non-discrimination on the other. That's just one part of it.
Amen.
But the end result is really a complete lack of any clarity of direction, or there is no common moral fiber or binding cohesive elements in Canada.
There used to be. There should be again.
No doubt.
Yeah. There should be again.
Well,
so what we've got to do is roll back the mistakes that we have made and not just, you know, chug on further into the swamp, waist deep in the dig muddy, and the damn fool says, charge on. You know?
Yeah. Well, we've got a little sound effect there. We're getting some feedback here in the studio. Hang on a minute. I'm going to turn that down.
Okay.
Doug Christie, can you tell us, you're one of many, many lawyers who are representing many different groups in this case, give us the lay of the land especially for people outside of British Columbia who haven't been following this. Who actually has a poker in this fire? Are you still there, Doug?
Nope.
Attorney General of British Columbia.
Yeah.
He upholds the legislation, and he argues that it's valid because it's socially necessary to prevent harm. Then there's the Attorney General of Canada. They uphold the legislation. There's the Asper Foundation. They uphold the legislation.
What foundation is that?
Asper Foundation, I think.
And the Canadian Human Rights Museum.
Yeah,
I think so. And they uphold the...
Yep. And then there's Stop Polygamy in Canada. There's some groups that are particularly afraid of Muslim immigration, I think, mm-hmm. which is, I think, at least a discriminatory position to take, but that's just my argument.
Okay, yeah. Uh-huh.
And then there's the Amicus. Leaf, West Coast Leaf. They uphold the legislation, but they think it should be read down to require some element of, shall we call it, compulsion or coercion, because they say the freely, voluntarily entered polygamous relationship should not be prohibited.
I wonder how they're going to determine that.
Well, they'll have a social worker. they'll have somebody from the government go into Bountiful and interview everybody, and before too long we'll have a huge number of MCFD cases of alleged coercion, and it'll be a
well, it's long, by the way, it's long been my prediction that the case will be upheld on feminist grounds, that the polygamy discriminates. The law will be upheld on feminist grounds because polygamy will be seen to discriminate and oppress women, and that's been my prediction from the outset of all this, by the way.
Well, I sense the same thing, actually.
Yeah, and what is amicus exactly? We hear that term.
Yeah, that's the friend of the court, basically, because the attorney general is taking the position of upholding the law, then someone has to be there to stage manage and orchestrate the opponents. And I'm one of the opponents of the law, along with the BC Civil Liberties, and I guess the representative of Winston Blackmore and some of the members of the FLDS.
And isn't there a polyamorous group?
I'm sorry?
Isn't there a polyamorous group involved in this?
Oh, yeah, that's right, too. Can you hear me all right?
Very much so. I'm shouting into my mic, though, so make sure I know if the other ones
are. I just barely hear you.
Oh, really? Okay.
Oh, yeah, very, very faint.
While you were inside the courtroom, the television cameras were outside, and there was a number of fundamental Latter-day Saints women outside who were making their case to the public that they don't want to see this law struck down. They want the protection of this law. You know, it kind of reminded me of a little while ago when there was an attempt made to bring Sharia law into Ontario through the Arbitration Act, and the most vigorous opponents of that were Muslim women who didn't want Sharia law in Canada. They want the protections of Canadian culture.
Well, that may be. I would suspect that you'll always be able to find people who are antagonistic to authoritarian religion in any situation. I mean, nowadays I would suppose that there's many more people disgruntled at churches than they are within them. I mean, even the Anglican Church after, ordination of homosexuals.
Right. Yeah.
Doug, you know, a thought crossed my mind earlier today, you know, about the fact that this nation, one of the great references that we always allude to by Pierre Elliott Trudeau was, you know, the government of Canada has no business being in the bedrooms of its citizenry. And, you know, we seem to spend a lot of time in government and courts in the bedrooms of Canadians. It just seems, you know, for a movement to be get out, we sure got in. Do you see this being resolved at this court level, or do you see it going all the way up to the Supreme Court of Canada?
Well, I would suspect it'll go on to the Supreme Court. There's going to be, I would think, more pressure on the polygamous issue. I mean, you know, there's another way to look at this, and it's one argument that I think I will be advancing, that with the emergence of alternative and, shall we say, different sexual orientations, there's going to be a diminishing supply of men capable and willing to father children, and not only father children, not be just a sperm donor, but to take a paternal role. And women who wish to have children by a man who takes a paternal role, not just a sperm donor, will probably be hard-pressed to find candidates, and they may, as a result, find it necessary to enter into polygamous relationships in order to enjoy some semblance of what was a traditional family.
So, in other words, not only did the legalization of gay marriage lead to the deterioration of the concept of marriage, but you're going to argue that it also necessitated polygamy in a way to give. Well, very interesting stuff. How much time will you get, and when are you likely to stand before the court?
Well, actually, I said I'd take about 20 minutes to half an hour, and I've been sitting listening for, I think, 3 days now. And that's okay. I mean, I've learned a lot. I enjoyed the discussion, and they're very, I couldn't believe anybody could talk about polygamy for 2.5 days, but I learned that was possible.
Okay. Now, who is actually hearing this case?
The Chief Justice of British Columbia.
Right.
Mr. Justice Bowman.
So if we can't trust him, we can't trust anyone, right?
Well, with all due respect to the court, I think it's a difficult job to put one person into the decision-making role in such a complicated issue. I really think the legislature, being politically cowardly, and the Attorney General likewise, shifted responsibility for this hot potato into a courtroom where
it
doesn't really belong. It was like same-sex marriage. They didn't want to come to grips and vote on it and have to face the electorate, so they shoved it over to the courts, and the poor judges have to deal with it. And I wouldn't want that position for the world.
You know, we're running
out. That's an excellent point.
We're running out of time here too quick, Doug, but there was another interesting aspect to this, and one of the areas that was at the very beginning of this was CBC wanted to televise this.
Yeah.
And
I was all in favor of that because in all the controversial cases I've been in, I would have much rather the people had an opportunity to hear the actual witnesses than the editorial version spun by the media in secondhand and often ignorant commentary. The public needs to be educated by the law, and live television coverage would give them the opportunity to see and judge for themselves what's really going on.
And I agree with you. It was a perfect opportunity, and they denied
CBC
the public.
CBC waited too long. You know, they didn't bring this up until the very morning of the hearing, and I don't blame the judge in any way. This is something that has to be discussed, but I think it would have been best that they brought the application like a week earlier or so.
Yeah.
The problem then is really not enough men for marriages, but not enough real men with cojones in the parliaments of this country.
Well said. And on that note, we're going to have to end the discussion. Good luck in court, Doug Christie.
I don't know if luck's the thing.
Well, I'm not sure either, and I'm not sure if I should have wished you luck or not. It's a very interesting case, and it's gathered our attention here for many shows, and I'm sure we're going to be talking about it more. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
And keep in touch, Doug Christie.
Good night, Doug.
Good night. And quite a show here on Roadkill Radio tonight. We've covered a gamut of issues.
I don't know if you want to get lucky on this one.
Okay. Oh, yeah, okay, fine. I missed that one. Ron, good seeing you again. Carrie, good being here again, and we'll be back next week, right?
We've got a big show next week good with stuff. Chris Delaney's going to be joining us, update us on the recall efforts, and we're going to also talk to some of the men that have been involved. There was an interesting development in changing the Family Law Act here in B.C., so we've got some interesting
submissions. I got some questions for Chris.
Look forward to all that next week here on Roadkill Radio. Please join us.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
You've been been listening to Roadkill Radio.